I can't imagine trying to have done this 5 years ago. Certainly at the start of Krungbin, it's like, I can't go back and say that it would have been impossible for us to still have the kind of success, but I can't see how that would have happened. You know, our first year we played almost 200 shows and then it slowly went backwards from that, but not that much less, you know, and I want to be a present mom. So how to do both things is really complicated. There is a rule book for a rock star dad, you know. There is not a rule book for a rock star mom.
That was Laura Lee of Krungbin, and this is She Rose, a podcast with a mission. To turn up the volume of women's voices in music across genres and generations, She Rose is a deep dive into the experiences and perspectives of women and gender-expansive folks in a still overwhelmingly male-dominated music industry. It's a space where we discuss challenges and triumphs, how far we've come, and how far we still have to go. Telling our stories is the first step to making music better for everyone. I'm Carmel Holt. Our guest this week is a singer, songwriter, musician, and incredible bass player for what is one of the most sonically unique and successful bands of the past decade, with an equally unusual backstory. The trio Krungbin is a mostly instrumental band out of Houston, Texas, with a Thai name who write and play a sonic fusion of globally influenced and genre-busting music. Their roots go back to the early aughts, when its drummer DJ and guitarist Mark Spear played together in a church gospel band, then met Laura Lee Ochoa, and formed a friendship that eventually led to her discovery of the bass and ultimately to founding their band, Krungbin. Now, over a decade in, Krungbin has become a hugely successful touring band. And with that success, they found a need to recalibrate and reconnect with each other as the family they have become. The result is a fantastic new album, also their fourth full-length release, with the appropriately cozy title, A La Sala, or To the Living Room. In today's conversation, Laura Lee, a.k.a. Leezy, shares her journey from her own childhood living room, which inspired the title, to her pursuit of visual art, to picking up the bass and starting the band, the role of her alter ego, Leezy, and how that is evolving, and integrating her newest role as a mother into her life as a touring musician with her chosen family of Krungbin. I'm thrilled to welcome Laura Lee as this week's Shiro in the Spotlight. Laura Lee, welcome to Shiro's.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I was really excited when this came in. So thank you for having me.
I've been a fan, I want to say, for a very long time. I'll even venture to say from the beginning. So I was really looking forward to this as well. And I don't know if it's okay to start here, but I also rarely get to have a bass player on this show.
We're
sad, but true, but also awesome.
Yeah. BBC had me do an interview and they let me select guests and I picked all female bass players and it was so great.
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. Well, first up, I just want to say congratulations on A La Sala. What a gorgeous collection. Let's dive in and start there. First album that is non-collaborative, back to basics, the three of you in a room. How did this all coalesce?
Oof. It was a long time coming. I mean, I think we've been itching to just be in a room, the three of us making music for a really long time. When we recorded Mordecai, it was in 2019, we played, I think, at least 150 shows that year. Plus, we recorded Texas Sun, Some of Texas Moon, and part of Ali. So it was a whirlwind of a year. Like, I remember recording Mordecai, but it was also just like a part of a big tornado.
Yeah.
That we just hadn't been the three of us in a long time. And when we recorded Mordecai, it was in the middle of just like so much happening. And the record was such a party record. In terms of our own sound, it was the most party. And we were on tour. That was the spirit of where we were. And then COVID happened, which was the longest time the three of us had ever been apart. Mm. And the record came out while that was happening. We had no, like, you know that the album's out there, you know people are listening to it, but you don't really know how they're feeling about it because you're not with them. And then we came back to tour Mordecai and the world was changed. And we were all of a sudden playing these really big venues, sometimes multiple nights at those venues. And it just felt like so much had changed. And while we did metaphorically hold each other's hands throughout, the ship had just become a bigger ship than it ever was. And there were more voices around, there were more fans around, everything had changed. And so I think the need to just get back to basics, just the three of us with Steve, our engineer, and his cat or cats, however many he has at the time, was really important. And it was so important that we used less to make this record. Mark's pedal board went way down in size. There was less reverb. And it was the first time we've actually never had any guests at all on our record. And we love our like Houston homies, but I think we like really desperately needed to just kind of be like, the three of us are enough as we always were. And we don't need to listen to what anybody wants other than us.
I mean, when I hear you talk about all of that, I think it's important to say out loud that we have a romanticized version of success. And when we look at bands that get so huge and we're like, oh my God, that's awesome. And it is awesome. The other side of that is it's very ungrounding. And I can imagine, I mean, the good and the bad of doing that with a band rather than you're the solo artist and then you have a backing band that you're hiring. It's like how to keep your unit as a unit. And again, like you're saying, like all of these external voices and navigating this very, very big machine that, you know, fans may not even be aware is at play.
Totally.
It kind of makes sense and probably was very like essential that you grounded yourself again.
Totally. I mean, I think that it's like in any kind of relationship, in a marriage or a romantic partnership or best friends, anything, it's important to sometimes have these like resets.
Yes.
You know, where you like, you'll go on vacation or you have a date night
right.
with, you know, whoever it is, because you're like, I want to just like get back here.
Yeah.
You know, I like recalibrate.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful that I'm not a solo artist. I never wanted to be, but it's like, because we have each other, we have a check. We have two checks always. And anytime a decision is made, it's all three of us making that decision. But I think in the ungrounding that happened over several years, I think we were all lost, you know, especially with COVID thrown in the mix. And the romanticized version of success, like the amount of things that you are supposed to do or want, and you don't even realize, like, you don't know why you're saying yes to things. You're just like, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to play this thing. And we had already been in a process of saying, like, with every venue or city, why are we playing this venue? And making sure that we're not just saying yes to tours that were booked for us. You know, we made a really conscious effort this year to stick to theaters and as many amphitheaters as possible. We certainly have like the ticket sales to move up. And maybe one day it will feel like the right move. But I went to a bunch of arena shows last year just to make sure. And this album and where we kind of wanted to be, it was like, that wasn't the right thing. But that's one of those ways that you could just say yes, because of course you want to play the giant arena in whatever city it is. And you're supposed, that's the natural step. But we all like, we have to look at each other and say, this is who we are.
And I love that about a power trio or even just the shape of a triangle. And I know that you have a background in architecture. So I was looking forward to talking to you about the geometry of this setup. You know, it's like, it's very, very stable. The triangle.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Totally. Strong foundation. And it's also great because there's always a majority.
Yes.
But like we all trust each other. So it's like if two of us feel really strongly about something, mm-hmm. it's usually enough. And we have a rule. It's like somebody can dig their heels in. So if they're one versus two and you're like, no, I'm digging my heels in. I feel very passionately about this thing. Then we're like, okay, we'll look at that.
I do want to talk to you about the trio and you being outnumbered in that situation in terms of your gender. But before we go there, can we play a track from the new album? What would you like to start with today?
Oh, well, let's start with May 9th. So this song, the original creation of it happened, I think, before the band even started. It was something that Mark wrote himself and had been keeping in a deep vault. And he brought it out for the session and it felt so right. And I don't want to tell anything about the story. I think it's just one of the most meaningful, beautiful tracks on the record to me.
May 9th, track 2 on the new Krungbin album, A La Sala. And I have Laura Lee here with us on Shiro. She's the bassist for the band, the creative director for the band. Going into it, we were talking about the shape of a trio. I mentioned in passing your background in architecture. For those that don't know how this whole thing came to be, just to give a full picture of who you are creatively, can you talk us through your timeline a little bit of your creative evolution leading into Krungbin?
Sure. It's a big one. I went to school very early, but I went to architecture school initially. I was 16. I was way too young to be like devoting almost 24 hours a day to something because I had no idea what I wanted. I eventually switched to art history, but definitely like I love the arts, for lack of a better word. And I worked in art museums for, I guess, about 5 years leading up to Krungbin, which was how I met Mark, because I worked installation with his roommate. I met him at their house and he was watching this documentary on Afghani music, and I was studying art in the ancient Near East. And that was a very niche thing to bond over at the time. And then Mark had been playing gospel with DJ, and the three of us met for burgers every Tuesday night for 3 years before I picked up a bass and before we started Krungbin.
You had played music before that though, right?
Yeah. I played piano when I was a kid, and then I took up guitar for a couple years in high school, but it didn't click. Maybe if my teacher had encouraged me to buy an electric guitar and not an acoustic guitar, which is just really painful for little tiny fingers, maybe I would have stuck with it. But it wasn't until playing bass. I was like near graduating college when I picked it up, and it just made sense to me more than anything has ever. There's certain things like, you know, I was in art classes forever. I studied under a painter. I thought that that's what I wanted to do with my life. And I love it. And it's not to say that I don't love my drawings and what I make, but like you just kind of know when something just feels so right, or like you're working hard at something and you love it and that's wonderful, but it just doesn't like sing. But there was something about playing bass that like just physically felt right to me. And then all of a sudden, Mark and DJ, who I obviously still admire so much, but at the time I just like couldn't believe I was hanging around these like giantly talented people. They loved the way I played. And it made me feel like I really had something, you know.
That's an incredible story.
Thank you.
So when you started to play the bass, like, did you have any awareness around the, I want to call it scarcity, but that sounds negative, but just the, it's still pretty unique for a woman to be playing bass. Like
totally.
I said, when we started, I rarely get to talk to bass players. It's so awesome. Yeah. Were you aware of that, that it was something that was a little bit unusual for your gender?
Totally. I mean, I definitely felt cool. but I mean, I love Tina Weymouth. like always have.
Hell
I always
yeah.
thought, like, not only did she look amazing when she played, but her feel is very much a woman feel. Like, I personally think you can hear a woman's touch on a bass. So I like it, you know, and I think it really adds something. It definitely wouldn't sound the same. I personally believe if an experienced male bass player was playing the exact same thing that I was, it just wouldn't, you know.
Yeah.
And certainly visually it added something. And I think the friendship between the three of us and the diversity between the three of us makes us who we are. And it's like so important. Yeah. I love it. I'm so glad. I mean, I will say since, and it's not because of me, so this is not me taking credit, but since becoming a bass player, there has been such a rise of female bass players, and it's wonderful.
Have you had the experience yet of young women telling you that they picked up the bass after seeing you play, that the visibility of that helped to give them the courage to do it?
Totally. And her name's Ruby Adams, I think. I think her name's Ruby Tiger on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like just me that inspired her, but I know I'm one of her inspirations. She's an amazing bass player, little girl, and she came to our Boston show and I got to meet her, and it was just like so heartwarming and so inspiring to me mm-hmm. to see that. I certainly didn't have that. I definitely did not grow up as a little girl thinking I'm going to play bass. I had, you know, secret visions and dreams of being in a rock band, but I certainly didn't think it would be behind a bass guitar. Probably because there just wasn't, you know, like you're saying.
Yeah. It's really a powerful thing to have something to model yourself after, a role model, visibility. I mean, in all ways, right? Like young women behind the boards. I mean, that's still a thing that we really need to get more intentional about so that we're not looking down, you know, album credits if you're that kind of a music nerd, you know, and you're like, oh,
yeah,
I guess
totally.
This is not really something that girls do, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
What areas have you noticed in your trajectory now? It's been a decade plus, right? Mm-hmm. What have you seen? I mean, you just mentioned an increase in seeing more women playing the bass. Anything else that you've seen change or anything that you've seen not change that you think we still need to do some work on in that way?
I think it's both. Mm. I will say we are half and half. Girls and boys on our touring team, but also in our greater team. So I think if I were to count, it would be exactly split down the middle.
That's amazing. Which
it is amazing. And when we first started touring and we were looking for a front of house engineer, I did specifically request to find a female. And it wasn't like, we're not going to hire a male because that wasn't it. But it was just sort of like, it would be nice to have a female energy on our team that's involved in the sound, you know, not just like somebody on our crew, but somebody actually involved in the sonics so that I wouldn't be alone. And also because why not? And I remember at the time when I asked for this, it was like we had interviews with a couple of female sound engineers and it wasn't the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that brought them to us would be like, but she's a girl.
Right.
Like, just looking like just a female doesn't mean that that's right. It has to be the right fit in addition, you know. So we started there and I think Jade Payne, she's amazing. I love her so much. She's like our longest member of our touring party. But I think especially with her, probably more than anyone, I've noticed how she's treated at venues because she's a female.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become better and she's become known on her own. But especially at the beginning, the amount of like condescending handholding that the venue front of house person would do and me having to watch her politely tell them that she was good. You know, that's been one of the greatest things for me to watch is to watch her grow alongside of us. But I think there's still work to be done, you know. And across the board, we have like females on our team, you know, from our tech obviously wardrobe, not obviously wardrobe. We've had both male and female wardrobe, but
yeah.
But it's like, I've noticed that it helps that right now our team has so many women. So when we rock up to a place, we're such a force. But I think like when we were less, it was harder. There was still this just like boys club thing at venues. And that's okay. It's like it exists because that's just the way that it was. And it's not necessarily anybody's fault, but it hurts as a woman going into a place and not getting the same level of respect. For me, my experience, one of the funniest things that used to happen to me when we were starting playing and we didn't have a front of house engineer, we didn't have really anybody touring with us. We started to have a tour manager at some point in time, but it was like, you're relying on the house crew to help you. Mm-hmm. And I personally like my bass, I like the mids to be higher than anything else. And so I would ask them to turn the lows down, and the like amount of like huffing and puffing or scoffing I got, it was like, but you play bass, like you're playing the low end. Like we're, you know, and I was like, no, I actually don't want to be boomy. And it was this real, like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. And I would have to have Mark or DJ kind of step in to help me out because it was like, what do I know? You know?
Did you notice an increase in awareness on their part of what you were having to confront? Like, just like you have witnessed what Jade has had to go through, do you think that this experience of now observing what you have to go through in those settings has shifted their perspective on how things are for women in this business?
I hope so, you know?
Not that you can speak for them, but maybe
yeah.
even shifting dynamics between the three of you too. I don't know.
I mean, I guess what I notice is that as time's gone on, I just feel stronger and I feel more confident. And you know, it's like dogs can like sniff fear. And so I think when you're insecure around somebody who's talking down to you, then you don't seem like you know what you're talking about.
Right.
And now I just have a little bit more courage when I speak so that it's like, no, this is the way that it is. Don't laugh at me. Like, this is period.
Right. And also, like, I forget who it was that said this to me. I think it was, Aruge Aftab. Do you know her?
She's actually coming on tour with us for a few nights. I love her.
I
saw her once. She's so powerful.
So powerful. She's also fucking hilarious. Like so, so funny. She's got a great, like, dry sense of humor. But she and I were talking about her journey, and she was saying that what she realized is that sadly, we're still in a place where success earns you a voice. So the more she was getting noticed and getting that feedback and getting the critical acclaim and whatever, now people don't question her anymore.
Totally.
But it took her like finding the, you know, inner strength to push through all of that to get to that point. And her thing was like, I just want to see it get to a point where we don't have to go through that part. Because how many people don't make it through that part?
100%. Yeah. In so many ways. It's even like support you could get from different brands and stuff that like, they don't want to help you when you're small.
Right.
You know, and then they help you when you're big and you're like, I don't need your help anymore. I'm good.
Exactly.
I needed you then.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I can relate to that actually very keenly.
Totally.
We have Laura Lee of Krungbin here with us on Shiro's. The new Krungbin album is A La Sala. It is their fourth studio album. Will you share? I love this. It was in your album bio that your team sent why it's called A La Sala.
Yeah, and it's technically to the living room, but it's out there that it's to the room, which is totally fine. I called it that because when I was a little girl, like 3 or 4, and I really wanted to get everybody together in my family, I would run around the house screaming, A La Sala, A La Sala. And it meant that everybody needed to go to the living room immediately. and for us, it was sort of like, because this was about us, coming together in this sort of familial way, it felt really appropriate.
Did you come from like a big family? Can you expand on that a little bit? What prompted you to try to get everyone to the living room and what would happen then?
My mom's side of the family is giant. My grandmother was one of 15 siblings.
Whoa.
So,
whoa.
Yes. But people, like, in that case, it's like for Thanksgiving and stuff like that, when there would be like 100 of us, we would all scatter about. And sometimes I'd make like big card castles, you know, where you like get little playing cards and you like stack them up.
Yeah.
I made really big ones. So sometimes I think it was just about me wanting to show off what I had made. but also it's just like, you know, there's something that feels so good when you're just all scrunched together, you know.
You want to take us to another track on this album? What's your favorite?
It changes.
Mm. Today. What's your favorite today?
My favorite track today is Pon Pon.
How come? Yes.
Because it was the little engine that could of the record. It was almost kicked off the album several times and it really made it. And now it sounds awesome. And so, yeah, it's my favorite today.
That's Pon Pon. It falls just about halfway through the new Krungpin album, A La Sala. We have Laura Lee here with us on Shiros. You have an alter ego in this band called Leezy. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to do research and see, rightly so, a lot of your presentation, your costume changes, Leezy, the alter ego, fashion, the creative direction, the visual aspect of the band. And I wanted to check that with you. I know that it's something that you were very intentional about. Talk to us a little bit about that evolution. Talk to us about being the visual center of attention with the band as a woman, as the only woman in the band.
Yeah. I mean, at the very beginning, I wanted to not be known on stage. And Houston's music scene is relatively small. And everybody knew who I was. So we were opening up for a Houston legend, our very first show. And I knew that everybody I knew would be at that concert. Nobody really knew that we were opening up. And I wanted to feel like an alien creature, you know, on stage. So that was the initial sort of spark. I don't know if you've ever worn a wig. I highly encourage everyone to try on wigs sometimes because it's amazing how you put on a different head of hair and all of a sudden you're like, your shoulders stand up and you feel like you need a certain outfit to match the hair and you just have like a different swagger all of a sudden because you've changed your hair. Much like if you dyed your hair or cut your hair, but there's something about the wig that because it's literally not yours, you feel like you're stepping into this other world, like you're living in a different world. And so I think I liked that. And I think it helped. It was like my shield, my sunglasses, my protection from the world because I had never played a show. You know, I mean, the first tour I went on, I wore sunglasses the whole tour so that I had my normal hair, but the sunglasses acted as my shield. And I didn't want to wear sunglasses on stage. So this wig ended up helping. And it was just like the clothes and everything started to take form. And in a lot of the musical acts that I like watching, there is some element to their clothing and presentation on stage. I mean, it's like so funny because even like jeans and a t-shirt can be jeans and a t-shirt. But when like Nirvana wore jeans and a t-shirt, it wasn't just jeans and a t-shirt. It was a statement, you know? So it's like, it doesn't have to be necessarily this like glamorous thing that I have been doing at least. But I think making a visual statement on stage can be so impactful to the show.
I mean, it's interesting because in the context of the Shiro's conversation, I've had the full range, right? There's like the kind of more Billie Eilish frame of mind about it where you want to hide, you know, you want to like hide your body as a woman on stage, hide it from the male gaze, especially when you're so young and it's like, ew, I don't want to be like gazed at this way. I want the attention to be on the music, not on my boobs or whatever. So I'm going to wear baggy, oversized clothes. I've talked to women who had that in the beginning, and then as success found them, they were like, fuck that, I'm wearing a cat suit on stage. Like, I am like, this is me and my body, and it feels good, and I want to move, and it just feels better. So anyway, I was just like, I was just psyched to open that floor, you know, a little
bit. It changes for me and different, you know, where I'm at. I remember at the beginning, the first stylist I ever I worked with, who's the same stylist I work now, but when we first started working together, I was like, I want to be cool more than hot, you know? And like, that was where I led with. I wanted to be as much of an art piece as I could on stage, more so than I was concerned about being sexy. And if I was, then that was a great bonus, but that wasn't the focal point. And certainly at some point I entered a like, no, I'm going to flaunt this. And it looks so awesome. Like, right. I'm going to wear this like tiny, you know, bedazzled, sequined, not a bathing suit, but something similar to that. And it looks so cool. It looks hot. Also, I can't play behind it. So it's not just like I'm just up there doing that. But I enjoyed feeling like that, you know, and I'm proud of it. It's like there are certain shows where I'm way sexier on stage than I ever anticipated being. And it's like, I have those pictures saved on my phone. And when I need a little pick me up, it's like, that's me. That's great. That's still not my main intention. Yeah. You know, but I enjoyed it. And it was something that I had to step into because, you know, one thing about performing, especially as like things get bigger and things get wider on stage, is like, people can see every side of you. And this is all happening while you're playing and focusing. You know, it's one of the things of like sort of staying in shape before and on tour, where I'll be like, you know, working out a lot or making sure I eat right. And somebody will be like, Laura, you look great. And I'm like, oh, I know. I don't feel bad about the way I look. I just do not want to be on stage thinking about it. I just want to go up there knowing that it's not something I need to worry about. Because it's, you're going to get all of the gazes, you know, no matter who you are. And it's tough when there are comments like, she's only successful because she's a girl, or she's only successful because she's hot, or people only watch Krungbin to watch Laura's legs, or whatever the thing is. And it's like, I actually just don't buy it. I mean, I think it's a nice, easy thing to throw out there, but it's not true. It just so happens that that day I felt like wearing that, and that's that, you know. But I definitely didn't have the confidence to do that at the beginning. And I think that part of when I made the decision to strut around in the smaller outfits, I was doing it for me, to some sort of like, I'm going to have this moment and I'm going to enjoy this moment and I'm going to enjoy it later on looking back on this moment. Right now, I definitely am feeling different. I don't know what this year's outfits are going to be just yet. I haven't sat in front of a mirror and played just yet, but I know that I want it to be a change because I am changed and I'm a mom. And not to say that I think I should wear more clothing because I'm a mom, because that isn't the thing. It's just sort of like, I just feel different. And I don't know what that is going to amount to in the clothing that I wear, but I know it's going to be a departure from, you know, 2022.
Mazel tov, by the way, on having a kid.
Yes, it's a whole nother aspect of females on the road.
I was just going to say, I'm so glad that you brought that up because it was absolutely something that I wanted to talk with you about. I want to make sure that we fit in a bunch more music. It's funny, when I saw May 9th, I was like, was that the date of the baby being born? But yeah, go for whatever. It doesn't have to connect with what we're talking about, or it can, if there is any connection to being a mom on this record.
Well, I'll throw out like a family song, which is Hold Me Up, Thank You.
That's Hold Me Up, Thank You. Krung Bin, their new album is A La Sala, and we have Laura Lee here with us, a.k.a. Lizzie on Shiro's. I'm Carmel Holt, and as we were going into the song, we were talking about this major change to your life, which was becoming a mom, and it was in the context of talking about how you present on stage and you just kind of rethinking, because you've changed. It's a major change to your body. It's a major change to your life. And, you know, it was interesting when I started doing, I do not have kids. And when I started doing this show, I completely did not think about the fact that I was going to be talking about motherhood so much. But particularly since, you know, we've been doing this during the pandemic years and then out of the pandemic years, so many artists were like, well, shit, I guess we're not touring. This may be the time. There may never be a time like this where I could get pregnant and have a kid and at least get that process underway before the machine starts up again. Did that factor in for you in terms of timing? And what was that decision-making process like for you? Because I know that lots of women kind of grapple with that when they are in, you know, a touring recording band.
Yeah. I mean, I've always known that I wanted to have kids, or at least a kid, but it was never the right time. I mean, it just wasn't. I feel like I have been good about trusting my gut and knowing when things are right. I also hadn't had a person to have a kid with, you know, that I was ready to embark on a lifelong journey with somebody. But timing did play a factor. The band played a factor, at least for me. I mean, if you asked Mark or DJ about it, they would tell you that they want me to do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it, and they never want to be in the way of that. And I love them for that. But they are also my family, and Krung Bin is also my baby. So it did matter to me. We had made the decision to tour Mordecai. Didn't even feel like we were touring the album because it had been so long. But that last tour we did, we knew we were going to take a year off touring afterwards, at least. We really asked for 18 months, and I think it hasn't exactly been that, but that was what we asked for. And I met a special someone, and it was like, well, I have this gap. And also, while I think anything is possible when you put your mind to it. I think that we are in a place in our careers where I can do this in a really manageable way. I can have help. Like, we can afford the help. We can afford the space on tour for it. And it's really hard. I can't imagine trying to have done this 5 years ago. Certainly at the start of Krungbin, it's like, I can't go back and say that it would have been impossible for us to still have the kind of success, but I can't see how that would have happened. You know, our first year we played almost 200 shows, and then it slowly went backwards from that, but not that much less, you know. And I want to be a present mom. So how to do both things is really complicated. There is a rule book for a rock star dad, you know. There is not a rule book for a rock star mom. I know, like, Pink has been really good about like putting that forward. I haven't actually watched the recent Beyonce documentary, but I know her kids are featured in it. Since being pregnant and having a kid, I've been put in contact with Charity from Head and the Heart. She's touring with her two kids. So she's been like my spirit animal guide, telling me like the type of gear to bring. And she got a pelican for her kids and all kinds of like really practical advice. And now there's been like, seems like a moms on tour support group that's starting to form that has been so nice. Like, I had a meltdown yesterday about various things between tour and motherhood. And I was just like, I just want like a touring mom hug, you know, and I got it. But it's hard. I mean, it is like a lot of things have to be put in place. And more so than that, you have to have such a supportive network around you to be who you want to be in both places, you know, and how you make that work. But it's interesting because it's like, to tie into what you were saying before about clothes. And I was saying, well, I'm a mom now, so I don't know if I want to wear that. It's not about how I want to be presented. It's that like, I want to be able to put my daughter to bed and I might not have time to get that outfit fitted, you know?
That's amazing.
So, yeah. You know, I'm having to prioritize different things in my life. And while the outfits are still going to be important, I need to figure out some way of not making them take up so much time. You know, they took up a lot of time on tour up until now. And so it has to look and feel differently because I'm adjusting to being a mom. And she's coming with me on tour to all of the tours, you know. And I've had like my manager call me and be like, you're taking her to Europe? Yes, I'm taking her to Europe. She's coming to Europe. You're taking her to Asia? I'm taking her to Asia. Like, it's happening. She's coming. We're going together. I'm going to be with her as much as humanly possible on the road because that's the kind of mom I want to be.
I got a little teary when you just said that. That's so amazing. And holy shit, that's like big. Good luck.
Thank you.
But it sounds like, you know, you're really figuring it out. And thank God you have connected with that network. But this also like comes back to what we were talking about before, about balancing out the cruise, balancing out whatever. And also like nothing exposes how imbalanced our industry is in that way and not centering women than this. This is like the ultimate moment where you're like, holy shit, this was not made for me. This was made for him and for him and for him. But
totally.
Like the green rooms, the tour buses, even the pay scale. To use another past example, Lido Pimienta was on this show a couple of years ago. Do you know who she is?
I don't.
Oh.
I just nodded, but I don't. Okay.
Look up Lido Pimienta. She's a Colombian artist, transplant to Canada. She had a big album a couple of years ago called Miss Colombia.
Okay.
She's also worked, you know, Bomba Estéreo? Do you know that
I do.
Band?
Okay.
Yeah, so
I do.
They're like really tight. Okay. They collaborate a lot. Anyway, her thing was she has 2-3 kids. And she was just talking about how you actually need to pay me more. Not even just equal, you need to pay me more because I need to pay for my childcare. There's all of these extra things that go into touring as a mom. And,
totally.
You know, that needs to be factored in. You're not just like rolling in there with your stuff. You're rolling in there with your family.
Yeah, I had a, God, I'm a people pleaser at heart anyway. Mm. But I realized, like, I felt so guilty leading up to this tour, knowing how many expenses I was going to have, that the band was going to pay for. You know, it was sort of understood that I would need more. You know, now I'm taking a nanny to help me on the road. So when I can't be there, she has somebody. But that means travel, hotel, et cetera, extra transport. It's a lot. And I felt so bad. Like I was sort of figuring out a way of how I could pay for half of it or figure out something so I wasn't taxing the guys with it. And was like, if they were in the same place, I would 100% be supportive. Why would I feel any differently? And it wasn't because of them. They, before I even went to them to talk about it, had already agreed and approved that things were going to cost a lot more because I was taking a kid on the road and they supported it. But at some point, I had to have a talk with myself and say,
yeah,
I'm not going to apologize for needing more because I'm a mom now. And because I'm a woman, essentially, touring. And there is, I mean, it's up to the men, I guess, ultimately, because you can tour with your family no matter what sex you are. But it's more common for men to go off on the road and come back to their families versus taking them on the road. But it was like, it was not a choice for me. I don't know how to do that. I have a friend who's playing who has a daughter around the same age as mine. And she's just doing very small, like one-offs. Because also it takes a huge toll on the budget to take everyone. But she's having to like go do a couple shows and come back. And she's missing her kid tremendously, you know, especially in the first year. There's like a physical attachment that you cannot explain. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like more rare than it is to have women in venues is to have moms on tour and in venues. And I'm so, so grateful to be in a position to be able to do it all.
And I'm so glad that you are doing it. And I'm so glad that we're talking about it. Like, this is all so important. I mean, there are women who have kids and feel like they almost need to hide it because we sexualize women so much prior to, that's part of like our currency. It's like, you're hot until you have a kid. And then somehow you're, value goes down, and then all of these like unsexy needs, these totally. Unsexy, you know, real life factors that come into play in your job. That's not rock and roll. That's not hot.
Yeah. There's also like some sort of pressure to be more
yes.
amazing than you already like. It's
absolutely.
Like, no, I look exactly the same.
Yeah.
I'm doing all the same things and I'm a mom.
That's
and it's
right.
Like, it's just impossible. You know, yeah. I think the greatest thing I have learned in being a mom is like, no, it's all going to get done. It might be a little slow. It might be a little messy, but I'll get there. You know, it's like there's been some kind of pressure removed because at some point you realize that you just can't, you know? Yeah.
Amazing. Well, I am so in awe of you and what you're taking on and what you're about to do. And based on everything that you're saying, I have zero doubt that you'll do it. And I'm sure it'll have its hard times, but I think you're going to do a great job. And I think fortunately, unfortunately, in all of these ways, right, before it all becomes normalized, there's something about us doing it in full view to not only kick doors down, but also keep it open long enough to bring those behind us with us and hopefully
Amen.
Make it easier for the next, you know?
Yeah, I have to shout out my partner who is male, who is like coming on road with me.
Hell yeah.
And it's like, rare is the mom on tour, and also rare is the male giving up so much to support the woman. Like
Hell yeah.
Everything, uprooting everything. And it was a part of the, I want to have a kid and I want to do this. So this is part of the whole package. But it's like, I feel so lucky. I also know that it's part of like me saying, this is what I want for myself. But, you know, it takes a village and I love my village.
And what perfect timing with an album that represents all of this. The new Krungbin album is A La Sala. Laura Lee, thank you so much for being with us. Before we wrap up, I have a final question. It is a wrap-up exercise that I do at the end of every episode.
Okay.
It's called the Shiro's Magic Wand. Are you ready for this?
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Laura Lee, I hand you the Shiro's magic wand with which you hold the power to change anything in the music industry for women, non-binary people, genderqueer people, anyone marginalized that I didn't just mention. What would you change? The first wave of the wand. And get ready. It's a little bit of a heavy wand, but I know you can handle it.
It is. I mean, I just like right now I'm just envisioning myself like waving the wand and me making dreams possible. And that's just what it feels like. I just wish everything could be a dreamier place.
Love it. With thanks to Laura Lee, take us out with a final track from A La Sala.
Okay, my final pick is Todavía Viva, which translates still alive. We are all still alive and kicking.
Thank you, Laura Lee. Thank you for being with us on Shiro's.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Laura Lee Ochoa for being with us. Krungbin's brand new album, A La Sala, is out now on Dead Oceans. Shiro's is produced by me and is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. Our original theme music is by Lucius. Shiro's is also a nationally syndicated radio show. You can visit shirosradio.com to find out more and support our work. Keep in touch on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Carmel Holt, or find us at Shiro's Radio. And please consider leaving us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. That helps us grow and bring you more Shiro's. Until next time, remember, music is our superpower. I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks for listening.